Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, hi everybody, and welcome to a very special Kings of Anglia podcast, video cast as well. You can see who I'm joined by here on the video. But it's a podcast that I hope you're going to enjoy listening. So we're joined by a player who, well, in a very short space of time at Ipswich Town Football Club, made a very big impression. There's no doubt about that. 75 games, 27 goals, joined in 2000. And by the time he left, Ipswich had enjoyed two of the greatest seasons in recent history. He led the Premiership goal scoring charts for a while in his time here, and well, it's just great that he's here. He played in total 660 games in the league, and it's funny because when people talk about legends of teams, it's not often you would say a person who's only been there a couple of seasons would be classed as a legend, but this man made such an impression. He certainly was. It's Marcus Stewart. Marcus, great to see you and listen to you. How are you keeping?
Hi everyone. Very good. Yeah. Steady away, you know. I'm pretty got through COVID okay, you know, psychologically, family okay. So you know, there's a lot of people that are worse off than I've been in during COVID. So I'm pretty lucky really. Now we're just getting through it, of course. So everyone's looking forward to a new season in football. I'm personally looking forward to a new season in rugby because my boys play rugby, so I'm going to So, yeah, a lot of good things coming up over the next coming months. The Euros, of course, the Champions League final. It's a lot of nice things. And a lot of maybe holidays for people, who knows. Maybe somewhere different in Portugal. yeah, it's a nice, some nice things to look forward to at the moment from everyone's point of view. I think everyone's looking forward to a new football season, hopefully with a bit of normality.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Marcus, very much so. I mean, I don't know about you, but do you listen to football matches with the sound, with the crowd noise on or off? I keep it on, but
I've got to have it on, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though when you have, there's a shot and there's a 10-minute delay with the crowd cheering the shot, but you still need it on. I can't, you know, I'm used to watching training and taking training and having practice games behind closed doors, and it's soulless, to be honest with you. So last thing I want to do is watch a game is with no crowd. I think everyone in with the playoffs recently starting, of course, and obviously the last week in the Premier League with crowds in the stadium just made it so much more atmosphere and a bit more exciting, really.
Couldn't agree more. Always makes me smile. Always makes me laugh when there's no crowd. When you don't have any crowd noise and somebody swears, the old F word comes out, and the poor old commentator's on it straight away. We apologise for any. And I sit there thinking, well, what do you? We're not bothered. We're watching. We understand.
There's some people that are bothered, and I don't get that. You know, it's a sport, and you know, there's no crowd. You're gonna hear things like that. You probably hear worse crowd when the game's on. You know, when they come back. You know, let alone the players. So. It's just part of the sport, you know. It's an emotional thing, and like I say, the commentator shouldn't have to apologise for stuff like that. No,
it gets crazy. Well, talking. It's lovely to catch up with you, Marcus. And of course, we'll talk about so many things. Hopefully, in the next 45 minutes to an hour or so. And of course, talking of commentators and media and stuff, Marcus, you're doing a bit more media now. We hear you here in Ipswich on BBC Radio Suffolk. You're doing a little bit of co-commentating. You obviously enjoy it. How did that come about then?
Brennan just called me, Brennan Woolley, and just said, do you fancy doing some, you know, we're down your way. I'm not sure what game, I think it was Plymouth or someone like that. Do you fancy coming along and doing the game? And it just went from there, really. You know, I just said, I really enjoyed it. I love my opinion. I love talking about football. I try to break it down for people so it's not just the normal cliches. You know, try and paint a picture if I can. And I like it, yeah. Obviously, the season finished now. Couldn't do a lot towards the end of the season because COVID restrictions were even more tighter with away games. So hopefully next year he invites me back. And off the back of that, I've done a bit for BBC Bristol as well with Bristol Rovers. So yeah, I really enjoy it. It gets me going to games and it keeps me thinking about the games because, you know, it's really hard for me personally to watch a game and not try to break it down. You know, it's really hard for me to watch it as a fan and just enjoy the goals, enjoy the atmosphere. I can't do that. I pick holes, and that's just how I work. So it's quite nice to do it on and actually tell people what I'm thinking at the time.
And you're right. You say these things do lead to other things, don't they, Mark? As you said about you know, with BBC in Bristol. I mean, suddenly you get a few phone calls here and there. And it's great. And it keeps you in football, doesn't it? That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's quite nice. You know, it gets me watching games when you know a lot of people can't go to the games as well, and it gives me an opinion to shout my opinion about and people to listen to. I do try and break it down a bit if I can, and paint a picture. That's what I try to do. But at the moment, I've enjoyed it. But let's see what goes on with that next season. We've got another month or two before it starts. You get the friendly games, of course, pre-season games, and see what happens then. But yeah, it's for the time during lockdown, it helped quite a lot, really.
Now, it'd be very amiss of me not to help out my non-league friends here at Bury Town Football Club, because Bury Town are a good, great non-league club here. Well, lots of great non-league clubs here. And you're going to be doing a night with Marcus Stewart at Bury Town at Ram Meadow, I believe, in the next month with...
I think it's July.
July the 1st. July the 1st, I think.
Say that, yeah. July the 1st. So, yeah, I'm going up to do that. And... come along, just have a chat. Open to anything. I'm pretty laid back. yeah, it'd be a good night. Kieran, I've done a couple with Kieran McGill a few times. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a bit of a journey up, but you know, stay overnight and come back the next day. So I'm looking forward to going up there. I don't know how many people are going to be going there, if I'm honest, but more the merrier, really. It'll just be a relaxed evening, if I'm honest.
I think there'll be quite a few. I think I'll be pretty sold out, Marcus, I would suggest, but I know you can still get tickets. But I mean, is this something? I mean, you say you've done a few. Do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy just you've always been a good with fans, haven't you? You've always liked the fans and chatting.
I'm pretty laid back, and I'll chat with anyone about anything, and that's what type of nights I have. You know, I'm not there to get drunk and be a lout, you know, like the old days used to happen. Not myself, but you know, I can imagine back in the day, or even now, it might happen where, you know, people go to nights like that and just see it as a free drink and, you know, just make a fool of themselves a bit. I'm there to just have a laugh, really, and chat about it all times as honestly as I can. Some questions I might swerve, some I might answer. You might be surprised.
So let's take you all the way back then. When you were a kid, did you think you'd be a pro footballer, Marcus?
Well, no one expects to be, but I knew I always liked football. You know, we used to play on our local green, turn up on a Sunday. One street would turn up with five or six players, aged between 5 and 18. And we turn up, same sort of age group. And then we split the teams, and then it was first to 20. And if it was over after about 10 minutes, we'd do it again.
Yeah.
You know? Generally on a Sunday, and that's how it all started, really. And then boys clubs, and then from boys clubs, people start to notice you. But so it went on from there, really. And then obviously Bristol Rovers and Ipswich, Huddersfield. It just goes from there. I don't think you know at the time. I think once you think you're good and you're scoring goals at whatever level, you're not in the system. You're just thinking about loving and enjoying football like most kids do. And from there onwards, you know, I'd never had my parents in my ear saying, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that, you can earn this money, you can earn that. That wasn't how it was. I was pretty just played football. That was it. No one told me in my ear what I could be. So I had no hype to believe, which is a lot of time these days. A lot of people are money orientated and the football comes second. So if your football's good, your money's going to come with it. That's how it works. So I was never ever thought about money. I just thought about loving football, and from that time onwards, it became a job. And then, but I still loved it, of course. So I was getting paid eventually for something that I loved doing anyway. I would have done at whatever level until the probably age I retired anyway at 38. So I was a lucky man. I just had a talent. I had left foot. Left foot players are quite special. generally. I know there's right-footed players are as well, but left-footed players are technique-wise are pretty good. So I realised the older you get that you have a left foot. Maradona had one. Messi's got one. You know, Beckham wishes he had one. So yeah, I was pretty lucky, and I enjoyed it. Dreams come true, and they did for me.
Now tell me when you were a youngster, did you? Because I mean, obviously Ipswich Town. We only saw him for a couple of seasons, Marcus, but it seemed like a lifetime. It was so wonderful, great period of the club's history. And tell me, back in the day, did you just sort of dance around goalkeepers and things like do like sort of stuff you did? I mean, because you were just so composed and it just looked so natural. Was it?
I remember a time, and I always reflect on this time. And it was never taught to me. No one ever coached me into how to go around goalkeepers. But I remember when I was, you know, I was gone about when I used to play on the green with friends and stuff like that. I remember one game. I did it in that game. I must have been around about between 7 and 9 years old when I did it. But I remember doing it at the time, going around the goalie. The goalie must have been about 18 years old. Went around, scored a goal, jumpers for goalposts, that kind of
thing. Yeah.
And that was it. But from that moment onwards, it's probably etched in my head that I scored in that situation. But I didn't know what to assess before the goal. I just did it. And I suppose from that moment, it's kind of subconsciously in my head to do it when the time's right. Most times I've done it, it's been the right time to do it. I've been quiet a couple of times where I've tried to go around the goalkeeper, but generally it's worked for me. And I don't know why, it's just an instinct that I don't think you can coach that sort of thing.
No.
It's an instinct.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You just, being a very, very poor, average midfield player, I never actually got the opportunity to attempt it. But I mean, you're right. I mean, players, if you just watch it, you either naturally do it or you don't. But it was tremendous. It was tremendous to watch. So I suppose you're at Bristol. And then I suppose, to be fair, quite a big break came at Huddersfield, really. I think Huddersfield, would you be fair to say, sort of gave you that? That's where you perhaps became far more prominent in the game at that level.
Bristol Rovers were in League Division. Got relegated from Division 2, which is a championship now. And then they're in Division 1, which is now League 1. Division 3, which is
now League 3,
I mean, I was scoring goals for the previous two seasons. I was 22, 23 years old. I just felt it was time to leave, you know. It was the end of, I think it was Bosman time as well. I just kicked in, or was close to kicking in. And from my point of view, I just wanted to leave and go somewhere else, not because I didn't like Bristol Rovers. It was just time to move on, see a bit of the country, not stay in my bubble in Bristol, which I could have done all my life, which I see a lot of Bristolians do, ex-players and players, and become a small fish in a big pond. And that's what I wanted to do. I've become big fish, small pond at Bristol. Time to move on. And it was the best thing I ever did. You know, I don't look back, and I'm pretty easy with getting on with people and pretty easy to get on with someone in different parts of the country. It didn't affect me whatsoever. I embraced it, and you know, I didn't know what to expect. Don't get me wrong. But looking back, it was every move was to a different part of the country, whether it's Huddersfield, Ipswich, Sunderland. Brilliant. Loved it.
It's funny because Huddersfield were right up there, weren't they, with Ipswich in the championship.
For a couple of seasons, you know, we struggled a bit. And the season I left, you know, I think we were one place above Ipswich, or it kept changing after every week. But we were both up there, yeah, you're right. That we all know the story. Some people might not, which I'll go into it in a minute if you want me to. But that was a strange time, yeah, because we like I say, for us to sell someone on the back of that. And I was quite a good lad in the dressing room. I had a good laugh. I got on with most people, so I wasn't a bad egg. So it baffles me to this day, really, why they saw me. And I think it still baffles a few Huddersfield fans, if I'm honest.
I think it does. And you've only got to read, you've only got to look back at that period. I mean, it's 20 odd years ago now, but you've got to look back at that period, and Huddersfield fans were left incandescent. I remember I was editor of the Greenen, which we'll get onto in a minute, Marcus, because you did a fantastic column in the Greenen. And I remember someone contacted me because we had a letter come in saying, why have Ipswich Town spent all this money on Marcus Stewart? You know, what don't really know much about him. And we had a phone call from someone in Huddersfield who said, you've just signed yourself a 20 goal a year guaranteed man who'll work his socks off, blah, blah. It couldn't be high enough praise. He said, you got it for an absolute steal. And of course, Ipswich fans never really didn't know much about you. But of course, that's went on to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I still get people in Huddersfield because I live up this way. Time to time, coming up to me now and speaking to me about it, you know, and it's still in their memories. Oh, God, I don't know what year it was. 99, was it? 2000?
It was, 2000, the beginning of 2000, wasn't it? Yeah.
So 21 years ago. So it's still quite clear in a lot of the Huddersfield Towns fans' minds. But like you say, off the back of it, time to go. And I look back at that move, of course, and it was the right thing to do again.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, obviously the Ipswich years, I mean, it was probably, I don't know how you rate them up there. I mean, they must be, I mean, you obviously went to Sunderland as well, but I mean, the Ipswich, again, I keep saying this, you're only here a couple of seasons, but it seemed like a lifetime. It was, so much happened, didn't it, in that short period.
Half season, I think I joined in January and then stayed to the end. I think it was 2.5 seasons. Two and a half. Oh, no, it might have been almost three because... obviously, we had the half of the year in the Championship where we got promoted, then a full year in the Premier League where we done really well, second year in the Premier League where we didn't do so well, and then I was around for the pre-season after that for a little while.
All right.
I left, I think, in the August of that transfer, last deadline day, I think it was, to Sunderland. So almost 3 years, really.
Yeah.
2 years and 8 months from that. So, yeah, I think the shelf life for footballers isn't that long at clubs anyway. You know, you normally sign a 3-year contract or a 4, and you might see that out. But generally, do you sign on for another 3 or 4 years? The shelf life of a footballer at a football club is around about that time. And my history tells me that was about my time as well. Apart from Bristol Rovers, I was at most clubs for 3 or 4 years, two or four.
Yeah.
You know, Huddersfield, similar time, 3 years. Ipswich 3 years, Sunderland about three. So that was kind of my shelf life. I was done and dusted after that.
Yeah, but I mean, at Ipswich Town, as we said, you scored some terrific goals, Marcus. I mean, I think I said something 27, but they all seem fantastic. One or two of the best
for me.
Yeah.
I think you always remember your debut goal away to Barnsley. Always. Always remember that. That's when I knew I could fit into the team because Jim McGilton had an eye for a pass to someone like me. And of course, you know, you can forget the playoff game goals and the Wembley goals. Now, to break them down into terms of which one do I like which one is my best goal out of those? I would say they're all as important as each other. I would say the first and second goal at away to Bolton were, especially the first one, I know it was we were 2-0 down at the time and we were on the back foot. The momentum was with Bolton. And off the back of that goal, the momentum became with us. Mm-hmm. And I think we took that into the second leg a bit, really. I mean, I missed a sitter in that game as well to get myself a hat-trick to take it back to 3-2, back to Portman Road. But, you know, but the most memorable game was the second leg of that game. Mm-hmm. As a team and the drama in it, the sending offs, the fouls, the last-minute goals, the penalties from Jamie Clapham, of course. It's just had pure drama in it. You know, Jim Hilton scoring the only hat-trick he's ever scored in his career in the biggest game in the club's and his and mine as a player history. Not previous history for Ipswich, of course.
No, I know, but I know what you mean. Yeah, current. Yeah, when you...
So it was just... That game was the most dramatic I've ever played in. That's for sure. But then Wembley brings its own type of pressures, doesn't it? You know, we went a goal down a game. We went a goal down or two in every game, two playoff and the final. And we ended up winning them. So it shows the character we had in the team. And that came from team spirit, by the way. That's what George Boy is some brilliant lads as people as well. And we got on, we had some great times. And that kind of got us through and was that extra different percentages that got us through games, I think. You know, we were willing to stick with each other. And so, yeah, all for all those three games for different reasons. The Wembley goal, it was a good goal. It was a great cross. I knew what Jim was going to do. But I don't think it was as important as the ones at Bolton.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I believe every sort of April or whatever it falls on, that first leg game, it's still referred to as Marcus Stewart Day here in Ipswich because it was...
Here on the same day, I'm like, oh, it's my day, is it? Okay.
You see that as well. Yeah, it's...
Well, but that's... Instagram, I'm not on anything like that, but I get the car and he just send it on to me. So it's quite nice, actually. Yeah, keep it going. I quite like it. Once a year, reminds me of those times.
I can't see it ever being changed, Marcus, because it was extraordinary. Because the thing was, of course, Ipswich had been so close. You weren't there when they'd been so close for so long. I mean, I think that was the thing. It was about the fourth attempt, I think. So this was a combination of, oh, here we go again, you know. Oh, my God, I don't believe it. Here we go again. For another time, we're going to get out 2-0 down. And then bang.
You know, going back to what you just said about getting so close, I remember playing for other teams and, you know, watching Ipswich. I don't know who was playing, but watching Ipswich in those playoff games and, you know, not getting to the next level, which was the final, of course, and missing out on away goals, I think it was the season before. So, and they binned them off for us, for our game, for our playoffs. So unfortunate. So when I did sign, that was a big pull for me. I actually thought I could make a difference to actually get up automatically. Because we had time to do that, or to take us to the next step and get us to the final. As it happened, we went another step again to win it. So, but I do remember, and I remember it vividly, thinking I could be the difference here, and I really backed myself to be that difference. And even in the final, when we went a goal down, and Wrighty missed saved the penalty in a crucial time of the game, I still believe we'd win it. Even when we play in Bolton at home and Margot went goes up front and nods down for Jim, who scores his hat-trick, even 2 minutes, 3 minutes before that, I still believed, I really did. I can't explain how, but you just know that it's your year. And I don't know how, you just do. And it was.
That team spirit, I think, as you mentioned earlier, Marcus, that was obviously absolutely crucial, absolutely key to everything.
Yeah, it was. No doubt about it. You know, I think team spirit has to be spot on. I think that comes with results. It comes with the type of character you bring in. You have to do your homework, recruitment. I know that because I've been involved in it as a coach since a retired player. So, and I would say all the teams I've been successful at have had a great team spirit. Great team spirit. And, you know, I don't think you can create it like back in the day. You know, we used to go out and be on maybe on a Tuesday, maybe on a Saturday. That was how you kind of bonded. I think these days it's changed a bit. But I still speak to people within the game, and I always say, you know, the best teams that they were in and we were in and I was in, it kind of, there's a pattern that it was all about, not all about team spirit, but that got you through the tough times.
Now, be honest. You can be honest with me now, Marcus, 20 years on. Had you ever heard of the Ipswich Greenen when you were asked to do a column in the Ipswich Greenen by myself or whoever was a club at the time? You must have heard of the Greenen.
There was a paper in Bristol called the Greenen.
Yes.
So I've heard of the Greenen, and that was it. You know, because it was a paper that used to come out almost straight away. As soon as the results were finished, it came out straight away. And that was the Greenen, and it was green. It was a green paper.
So, yeah.
So obviously when Ipswich asked me to do the column, I've heard of the green, But obviously, I've not heard of the Ipswich Greenham because I'm not from there. But I've heard of the Greenham paper, yes, for sure.
It was,
to get news out quick to the public as soon as you can, not wait till Monday, not read the news at all back in the day and the Sunday Sun, whatever you read on the Sunday. It was there for you Saturday afternoon, straight as soon as the game finished.
Now, of course, we had your column in there because you used to sit and do it with me sometimes. We used to sit and talk. And we ended up having an Ask Marcus Stewart email. We created one. And we had pages of these little questions. And you used to come in the office. I mean, those sort of things would just never go on today, would they? I mean, it was a great credit to you and the football club, you know, that they trusted journalists and flyers to get along and chat and do stuff. Which, of course, it was the fans who benefited because they loved seeing it all. Great. You know, things have changed so much on that front.
Yeah, they do. I'm strange as a player. I quite enjoyed doing that. But looking back, I had to give information on what was going on in training and stuff like that. You know, inside information, and I sometimes used to get a bit of stick off the lads because Stewie, what is that for? You know, which is because some lads are private, some aren't. Some are on Instagram, some aren't. Some want to keep themselves to themselves, some aren't. Some people don't mind the information going out, some aren't. So at the time, I just didn't care, really, if I'm honest with you. But looking back now, I probably think I should have held back on one or two things. But no, I enjoyed it. And like you say, it kind of did help with our cause in getting promoted. It actually brought, instead of players having a good team spirit, there was a great team spirit around the club. And if I helped to do that, I didn't consciously do it to do that, then brilliant. It probably did, really. Because all news was positive and there was a bit of inside information that, you know, you probably wouldn't get back then. Whereas now, everyone knows everything because it's social media. So, yeah, I think it helped. And if I gave out a little bit more information than I should have done, chaps, if you're watching any of the ex-players, sorry.
I can't remember anything too dramatic coming out, but anyway.
It's pretty lighthearted stuff. But
yeah, it was.
Good insight from the fans' point of view.
I know the fans loved it, but of course that season very quickly before we move on to further up your football and career and your future ahead. And of course, England call up, Marcus. You must have had this 100,000 million times. You know how close you were to an England call up, and I know you were quite cool about it and quite relaxed. But you really were. You must have been close. You're just in the middle of some very good strikers at the time, weren't you?
I was. Yeah. That was. That's just life, isn't it? You know, you can't do a lot about it. Now, if you look at, you know, look at the England squad these days, look at the strikers they've got.
Yeah.
Patrick Bamford can't get a look in. You know, it's just the timing of things. It's just how it is, cycle of football. If you're around, like Patrick Bamford is at the moment, and he's got Calvert-Lewin, Harry Kane, Danny Ings, all ahead of him. It's just unfortunate, you know. I don't look back and regret that. It's the manager's got to make a decision. Yeah, you know, I'm the most patriotic man in the world when it comes to English football. You know, I've got my flags up already, ready for the Euros, to be honest. I've even got some wing mirror socks that I bought. So
you haven't?
I haven't put them on yet, but they're going to go on. There's no doubt about that.
Brilliant.
So I'm the most patriotic man in the world when it comes to that. So to not get picked for England, yeah, of course it's disappointing, but I'm not going to hold grudges against people and be bitter and twisted about it. Ben had a decision to make, and I wasn't involved in that. It's not a personal decision against me. It's a football decision, and there's other strikers that were, you know, regular European Cup players and, you know, regular scorers in the Premier League season in, season out. Your Robbie Fowlers, your Andrew Coles, your Teddy Sheringham's, your Adam Shearer's, you know, so it is what it is. No regrets whatsoever. I did my best to try and get a call up, but it didn't happen.
Now, have you had enough talking about the gloves? Or should we move on from the gloves? Or do you want to...
I get reminded of that all the time. It's great. Love it.
It was just bizarre. All you wore was a pair of gloves. You'd think you were wore... I don't know what... If you wore them on your head or something, we might have all... But it suddenly... I think Planet Blue, whatever it was called, they must have sold thousands of them.
Well, it's strange because when I watch a football game now, you know, I say I analyse it and a bit differently than a fan would. I actually look around and see who's got gloves on with a t-shirt with a short sleeve shirt on, and there's quite a few, you know. So I'm wondering, has it caught on even now?
You're a pioneer.
Players, so no, but I did. What did I do at the time? I did it because I hated wearing long sleeve shirts. Didn't like wearing them. So the fact that I wore a pair of gloves, and I very rarely took a throw in, by the way, because gloves don't help with throwing because they're quite slippery. So I very, very rarely took a throw in. So it didn't affect that side of my game. Whereas if you're fullback, I think you got to wear gloves. I think they brought gloves out eventually where they had a bit of grips on them so you could throw it and wouldn't slip out your hands. So, I just did it because to keep me a bit warm, you know, it's the honest truth. And then it caught on, as you know. And the honest truth is I haven't worn a pair of gloves with a T-shirt probably since those games. Just walking around where I live. I haven't. So,
I remember we played Tottenham one Boxing Day. I think it was a Boxing Day morning or something, or around Christmas, and it was bloody freezing. And I think we beat in fact 3-0. It was on TV, and you had your gloves on then, I think. And I thought that was to be fair, you actually really looked the part then with that on that freezing cold day.
Oh, I bet I did. Yeah, I bet I did.
Anyway, So obviously, obviously disappointment to leave Ipswich, and things went back. But I mean, you moved to a massive club in Sunderland, and they are a very big club. But still, of course, bizarrely, still in the same league as Ipswich in League One at the moment. You must look at that league and think, known those two clubs so well, and thinking how,
Well, I mean, look at Portsmouth as well. I bet a lot of teams in that league, the likes of Ipswich and Portsmouth, for instance, just to name a couple. Would have liked Sunderland to gone up this year, because they're going to be another force next year. Lee done a great job with them and almost got them up automatically, but they tailed off at the end. So that league's going to be another tough league next year. There's no give me in that league. I think Sheffield Wednesday down there as well.
Yep.
So you've got Sheffield Wednesday, as well. You've got some massive teams in that league. So it's becoming tougher and tougher, I can't call it. Okay, it's going to be a tough year for Ipswich. It's going to be a tough year for Portsmouth. You cannot call it. It's the honest truth. With the changes with Ipswich, the changes at Sunderland, of course, the manager change at Portsmouth. You just don't know which way it's going to go. And then again, you might get someone like Lincoln who's going to come up and do it again. Mm. Who's to say that they're going to win the final?
Exactly. I mean, obviously, about Ipswich Town. Obviously, had some big changes. New owners, new manager. Paul Cook is there. There's a lot going on. It's just a lot. How do you feel as a player? There's so much going on at Ipswich. Would you be excited? Would you be worried? Would you be hopeful? Would you be, how? There's a lot going on, isn't there? So much. Would that disturb you at all, or would you not worry about it?
I'd be more worried about the managerial change, because that ultimately is what's going to affect you if anything's going to affect you. The changes going on at the club, it's not on your mind, unless your contract's coming up. But even then, it's up to the manager, really, to say to the owner, I want to keep this player, whatever. So unless you're not asking for silly money, you're going to stay at the club if the manager likes you. So the change of a manager always put me on a back foot. So Paul's had, I don't know how many games it was, 10, 12 games to look at what... So he had a good amount of time to look at the players that he probably wanted to keep on and get rid of. So when Paul came in 10 games ago and I would have been a player there, for instance, that's what I would have been concerned about, if he would have wanted to keep me on or if he'd like me as a player, that kind of stuff. The changes at the club, that don't affect me, like to say, the new owners, it wouldn't have bothered me. Just life goes on. The manager is the one who I've got to impress.
I mean, League One, finance is obviously crucial. If Ipswich do get the money, if Cook gets the money to be able to put into big, serious transfers, can you get some seriously, talented players in? Can you see Ipswich? They still haven't even been in the playoffs yet in this league, bizarrely.
I mean, listen, Paul's got a history of getting teams out of that league. Your Wiggins, your Portsmouth. So big teams out of that league as well, teams that have been in the Premier League. And Ipswich is one of those, of course. So time will tell, but I think it's still going to be a tough year for him and the club. I don't think you can expect things to happen overnight. It depends what players he's brought in. I haven't seen if he's brought any in or not, so it's, excuse me, because I haven't looked that up. But he knows the league and he knows who to bring in. So whoever he brings in, whether it's an unknown, whether it's someone who's played 500 games, trust him because he's done it before and you've got to give him a chance. And I said this when the old manager was there as well. You know, you got to give him a chance.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to do with Paul. And that's simple, and time will tell. But it ain't going to be no walkover in that league. I can tell you now, especially with Sunderland staying down, Sheffield Wednesday coming down, Lincoln, who knows what's going to happen, or one of those who doesn't win the final is going to stay down. Portsmouth, of course. So Oxford are going to be in it again. Yeah, it ain't going to be an easy league. But Paul knows it. And he's been there before with a big club. So he's got that experience.
I know this sounds a bit bizarre, but and people might say, what a strange club. But it's not. Did you find it easier playing in the Premiership than you did back in the league, in lower leagues?
No. A game was a game. And no, it wasn't, you know, because we played in the FA Cup away from home. I think it was it Dagenham and Redbridge? We played in the FA Cup.
Ipswich Town did, yeah.
Yeah, was it Dagenham Redbridge we played?
I think that wasn't Morecambe. That wasn't, we weren't there in Morecambe, was it? It might have been Dagenham.
Played Morecambe as well.
Yeah.
In that game. So you go to those games and they're just as tough as playing the Premier League games. Mm. You know, they are. You know, you go to Birmingham and we lost to Birmingham in the League Cup semi-final. They were in the Championship at the time. We were in the Premier League. But they were as tough as it comes. You've got to approach it each as you would any game. Of course, you got the pull of playing against the bigger name teams in the Premier League, but I'm telling you now, they're just as tough. You know, you're at their home ground, the weather's different, the pitches ain't brilliant. You've got to step up. You've got to work out what type of game it's going to be. Is it going to be a battle? Is it going to be a footballing game? Or are you going to have to play on the counter-attack? So all these sorts of things. You definitely have to adjust your type of game you're going to play. Lower league teams are as tough as Premier League teams. There's no doubt about that.
So, but, I mean, when the likes of Sunderland obviously not going up, the likes of Portsmouth not going up, Ipswich not going up. I mean, these are also clubs that have got very big fan bases. I mean, you know, they can make their grounds rock a bit, for want of a better word. Do you think the lack of fans over the last couple, you know, has that certainly hasn't helped clubs like Ipswich and Portsmouth? Or has it played into the hands of lower clubs or not?
I think it's 50-50. I think some players have enjoyed not having the pressure of fans around them. And I think those sort of players ain't going to last long in the game. The players that kick on love that sort of, whether you're hearing negative stuff from the crowds, it builds your character. If you've been on a 2-3 game bad run, you haven't scored a goal for 5-6 games and fans are starting to get on your back, it builds your character and it makes you a stronger person if you get through it. So I think some players have missed it. Some players have loved it. That's what I think. And you'll find out which ones those are next year when the crowds start coming back. I think, you know, look at Sunderland the other day. 10,000 home fans against Lincoln. They end up losing a game 2-1. With a penalty miss as well, by the way, from Lincoln. So, you know, it can have the reverse effect. I really think it can do. So we'll see when it gets back. It'd be interesting to see the stats of last season with no fans in terms of how away games went. Because obviously this year it's going to be back to normal again, hopefully.
Because I must admit, I mean, I don't know about you, I sit and watch some games on telly, obviously with no fans. And this is just me, the passion seems to have been so much less. And soon as, I feel like the FA Cup might be the FA Cup final, it suddenly seemed to completely different game. Suddenly because there was a lot of fans, the players just... It just seemed a different game.
Well, there's no feed for the emotion, is there?
No.
The emotional game, there's no feed from the fans to get people emotional. You know, and that's why you have to step up yourself and, you know, motivate yourself in some sort of way. So I think you get a feel of the game. Fans get a feel of the game, you know, and whether it's a bit of a niggly one and they're getting on one or two people's back, getting on the referee's back. They're, you know, one player might be annoying the fans and they're getting onto his back, you know, I mean, of the opposition player, I mean. So they create the emotion within the stadium, I think. And it's hard to recreate that as a player when there's no fans in there. You kind of feed off each other, I think. And it's been hard to gauge when there's an emotional moment in games with no fans there. I think with fans there, you know instantly when there's been a bad foul. You know instantly when there's been a goal. You know instantly when referees made a bad decision, because they're there. They let you know straight away. Oh, you know, that pricks the hairs upon your back as a player, and it creates an emotion within you. So I think players have missed that side of it. That's for sure. I know I would. But like I said, a lot of players want to hide behind the fact that they don't want any pressure on them as well. And some players love it, like I did.
Now, how would you have loved VAR, Marcus?
Oh, shit. Sugar, sorry. Well, it gives me nightmares. I watch it. I'm looking at the other night, the Man United goal, for instance, the other night. Yeah. Is he offside? Is he not? And I'm thinking, I was trying to put myself in Cavani's shoes. I'm just picking out this moment because it's the most recent game.
Yeah.
You know, you can see him, he's not celebrating. You can see when the goal was given, he's going to give it one of them. Because, I don't know. I think it's the right thing to do. I think VAR has been right more than it has wrong. Okay? And I like it. But in terms from a striker's point of view, a goal scoring point of view, I don't know. It would torment me for 5 minutes. I wonder if we look back and did VAR on my old goals, how many offside? And or ones that I've had disallowed that should have been onside as well. So it swings and roundabouts. Be interesting to do that one day, because unfortunately they're on the list and not going to be clocked off. But yeah, I think it's good, but it's definitely causes a lot of anxiety to the player that scored a goal, or the team, or the manager that scored a goal, waiting for a decision to be made.
Well, that'd be terrible, Marcus, if we went back on. Could you imagine if we're sitting in 3 years' time doing another one? And I say, Marcus Stewart played 75 games for Ipswich and scored 4 goals.
So let's look at our goals in the playoffs. The first one would have been a goal, because I didn't handball it. The Bolton goal.
Yep.
The second one was onside, definitely, because I've looked across the line, so I've seen it's definitely onside. The one in the final would have been a goal as well.
Yeah.
But because no one outside, good cross. And Bam Bam's would have been a goal because I fit on for him and he ran through the defence. So, yeah. But, you know, you can look at things like that now. Bloody hell, what if, you know, yes. The goals, I don't know. Would it have been a free kick for Holsworth's first goal in the second leg? I don't know. VAR might have tell you different. It'd be great to go back in VAR and say, VAR decisions, you actually wouldn't have gone through on this.
That is very true. I mean, could you imagine going back on something, a major final, and just saying, well, you do realise that two of those goals were offside. Yeah, it'd be bizarre, wouldn't it?
Imagine even taking one step further and he actually took the medal away from him and promoted Bolton that actually now won league.
Well, yeah, that'd be so there's your football. I mean, your football career was a terrific thing, Marcus, and we all loved it and stuff. And of course, you've gone into coaching and management. You said you take the year out right now, but something you're hoping to get back into, or are you quite enjoying the media stuff, Marcus? You have to make a decision, perhaps.
I enjoy all of it. I enjoy the coaching. I enjoy being on the grass. I love that, of course. I enjoy the media stuff. What I do enjoy the most is, you know, watching players learn, and especially younger players, you know, when they've got a chance and they look at you like little puppies and they want to learn, you know. I love that kind of feeling, and that they want to know more. But whether they ask you questions, I want people to ask me questions. If I haven't got an answer for you, I'll try and get one. I love being in that environment, of course. That's what I'm used to. Media, of course, it's just, I enjoy doing it. It's not something I'm going to do every week. I wouldn't have thought. I wouldn't want to do it every week, if I'm honest. But two, three times a month, great. I enjoy doing it. In terms of getting back into both of them, football, yeah, I'm still, I guess I just said to you earlier on, I've got two boys that play rugby. And I've not been able to watch them play rugby in the last year because what's happened. That was a part of the reason why I wanted a bit of a break so I can go and watch them play on Saturdays. But you know, their season is starting up now, so I get an opportunity to go and watch that. For instance, got grandparents that are poorly, so I need to be around for those and help out with the family. So all these sorts of things are still got going on.
Yeah.
But if the right thing come up, for sure, I'd do it. But, you know, first things first and family first still at this moment, because even though it's a year ago I've not had a job for, which was my choice, of course, everything's been put back a year anyway.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But I'm enjoying, I'm busy with life stuff. That's what I am.
That's funny you say about rugby, because my son played rugby as well. And of course, we've got this great argument about rugby refs and football refs and the difference in that. There is a difference, isn't there, in the way the games are handled, Marcus?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I like the rugby refs, if I'm honest with you. Even when watching the international games, you know, England or wherever it is, or the club games, Bristol, Bath, wherever I watch. I don't watch it all the time, but sometimes I'll put them on. If it's an England game, of course, it's going on. With me, England's socks on my wing mirror.
Socks on your wing mirrors, of course, yeah.
So it's going on. And I do. I like their mannerisms, and I like the way they talk, and I like the way, you know, they kind of chat with the player, and they actually explain the decision why they've done it, and they break it down for the player. And there's no, very rarely is there any contesting the referee's decision. You know, so I don't think it'll ever change in football. I think that's how it would be. All I'd like to be is the referees. If, you know, obviously they haven't got the microphones on in football, so you can't really hear them either. You know, whereas in rugby, you can hear what they're saying on the TV. But I'd like to think the referees I liked were the ones that come over and explain to me. The ones I hated, not hated, that's a strong word, but the ones I detest were the ones that would just walk away and not even talk to you, not even give you an eye. And that happened quite a lot with the games I played. Try and build a relationship with them from the player's point of view and the referee. Just be normal. Like I'm chatting to you now. Just go up to me and say, Marcus, listen, I gave the foul, but I didn't think it was one. I'll have a look at you, but I thought you just caught the back of his leg. Okay, thanks for letting me know. I don't agree with you, but, you know, I'll walk off. So I don't know if that happens a lot. I don't know if it happens a lot. On the flip side of it, I also don't know if the players give the referee chance to do that, because they're in his face so quickly. And he's got to book people because he's on the defensive straight away. So I think both are at fault, because referees, I think, need to explain to players more clearly why they've made decisions. VAR does that now for them a lot. But also players can help themselves by not being so aggressive in their manner when they go up to the referee, because straight away he's going to be on the back foot and eventually might even give decisions against you within the game, in the future of the game, you know, in the last 20 minutes or whatever. So I always like to keep referees on my side, because even as a coach I did, because, you know, if you've been on him from the sidelines for, I don't know, however long, for decisions he's made previously in the game, who's to say that in the last 20 minutes there's a decision that's gone 50-50 and it goes down to the fact that you've actually treated him wrong? You don't know this, of course, but in his mind he's thinking, actually, that coach has been all right, he's been a bit of a nausea, everyone, so I'm going to give it to him. So you've got to be careful with beat referees, because it can come down to those situations. They're not going to tell you that happens, but I'm sure it does go through their mind when it comes to a decision they're not sure about.
Well, look, that's absolutely right. I think, as you say, the referee, that would be a debate with rugby and football forever and a day. But, well, we're coming not too far short to the end now, Marcus, of what's been a lovely chat with yourself and catching up on. Hey, I mean, I know you've done lots of podcasts and chats and videos and stuff over the years. Again, as I say, again, just shows, especially here at Ipswich, the mark you made in such a short period of time is fantastic. But let's look forward to the summer, because we've got the Euros coming up. As you said, you're a big Euro, big England fan. Well, we all are big England fans. So I don't quite go as far as socks on my wing mirrors, but I am certainly as very patriotic. Your thoughts then, Marcus? You've seen the squad probably. It's obviously going to be whittled down, but being in the home country as well, Your thoughts?
My thoughts. I think Harry Maguire is key to our success. I think if he's well, we've got 2 weeks. 2 weeks Sunday to the first game. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
I can't see him being fit. I really can't. Even if he is fit, he's not football fit. You know, he's got to get up to speed. So I think he needs to be training next week. What's the day? So I think he needs to be training by the end of next week or the beginning of the week after, which is leading up to the Croatia game. That's what I think on the Sunday. And then obviously we've got a game on the Friday after and then the Tuesday after that. So he's key. I think what did he do without him? I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. He's got a few centre-halves, of course. But I'm really excited about our forward players we've got here in the team. Really excites me. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's come on leaps and bounds over the past season and a half. Harry Kane, of course. You know, our attacking lineup's brilliant. I mean, he has a decision. What I think there'll be one or two players, you know, maybe Jadon Sancho, maybe Greenwood, that might miss out. And you think, like I said before, it's about the timing. How can you leave Foden out? You've got Rashford, Sterling. Mason Mount is the best number 10 in the country at the moment, I think. He's just got energy about him with and without the ball. I'm excited about that. I think there's goals in us. But, I think Harry Maguire, in terms of keeping the back door shut and a bit of calmness on the ball and a bit of a man mounting in terms of size of him, attacking corners, defending corners, I think he's key. To our, and Jordan Henderson a bit, but he's key to our success. And we need luck, of course. You need luck along the way with the penalty shoot. You're going to get a penalty shootout. Stats tells you that. On the way to a final, you're going to get a penalty shootout. So you need a bit of luck. And let's hope David De Gea is in goal for Spain.
Talking of goalkeepers, actually, Marcus, and you're going to Bury. We mentioned Bury, going to Bury Football Club later next month. Nick Pope. Now, Nick Pope, of course, is missing out. He was actually played for Bury Town. Yes, he was at Bury Town before he moved on into the pro game. So, great stories with Nick. So, and here in Suffolk, we're so disappointed for him because he's gone from this non-league level to the top, and he's such a nice top guy. Always got time for the press and just feel a bit disappointed for him. He must be a bit gutted.
Heartbreaking. I mean, I couldn't. You know, from my point of view. You know, from not being picked, okay, fair enough. But from being picked and then that's been taken away from you from injury,
yeah,
it would have been a guaranteed number one, number two,
yeah,
to Pickford and Henderson. That would have been the three: Henderson, Pickford, Pope. An injury taking your dream away from you, you know, which comes around every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we've got a World Cup next year, which is going to be really strange: a summer of Euros and then a summer of the World Cup. Mm-hmm. So luckily he's got that, but still, you know, from his point of view, injury out of the Euros. Harry Maguire done brilliant season, 3 weeks to go, 4 weeks to go. Injury maybe out of the Euros. Henderson unfortunately might be coming back. That must be the worst feeling. I've never been in that situation, but that must be the worst feeling for a professional footballer to miss out on your national team playing in a major tournament. Heartbreaking. I feel for the guy. But luckily, he's had time to get over it because it's not as if it's just happened and he was in the squad. He's probably known about this operation for a little while.
Very unusual for a goalie to get injured at such crucial. Well, in any point, really. Goalies don't usually suffer too much of the injury.
No, a knee injury as well, which is strange. Normally, you have shoulder or, you know. But I wish him luck and I do feel for him.
And right backs, just finishing off in the English. I mean, right backs, we've got a plethora of right backs. Walker.
I think my team would be, if it was, the game was tomorrow, it would be, if Maguire's fit, it would be the right side of, it'd be left side of, sorry, Maguire and Shaw because they play for Man United. It'd be the right side of Walker and Stones because they play for Man City. And Shaw and Maguire and Stones grew up as kids together playing similar football, similar teams, similar area. So they know each other really well. And that's a great little mix. You've got your little connections on either side and you've got your connection in the middle. In front of them, depending on how attacking you wanted to go, I'd definitely play Henderson at some point. And I met, you know what? I really like Jude Bellingham. I think he has to be in the squad.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen him play before, but when I watched him play against, I think it was Man City in the Champions League, he's a box-to-box player. He gets in the box and creates himself chances, a bit like Matty Holland used to do. You know, you sneak up and get your goal. And we haven't got that in our team, really. We've got Mason Mount that can do that, but he plays a bit further ahead. And you're always, you know? Whereas a long-bursting midfield player that wants to run into the box, well, I don't think we've got anyone else like him. You know, you're either holding midfield players of your Henderson and your, not Dyer, of course, Rice. That's their jobs. And then you've got your attacking players with Mount and whoever else he wants to put in there. But you haven't got a box-to-box natural one like him. So it'd be interesting. I think he should be in the squad and I think he'd get his chance. And I think he's one for the future. So it'd be Henderson, I think, and Rice, if he's going to play two sitting midfield players. And Mount ahead of them, along with Harry Kane, Foden on the left. And I think, I don't know, I'm not sure I put on the right because Rashford's not good on the right and neither is Sterling. They both like to play off the left. So I'm a bit torn with that one. But that's for Gareth Southgate to sort out, isn't it? It's quite nice sitting on the armchair to have a chat about it. You know, he's under big pressure now. He's got a big decision to make next Tuesday, hasn't he? Because he's then got to have a squad of 26 if he wants 26. You know, I don't think he has to pick 26, does he?
I don't think so, because Spain picked 24 or something. I don't think he has to pick 26.
What surprised me if he'd done that, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's already the harmony within the team and keeping players happy.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure it will be. It'd be a great experience. But he's got to manage those players and keep them fit and keep them motivated.
So looking forward to the Euros. You're looking forward to the Euros then, Marcus?
Yeah, who wouldn't be motivated being, you know, just being in the England team and being wanting to be, you know, if you're someone like White from Brighton, who didn't even expect to call up in the first place.
Yeah.
I think he'd just be happy now being number 26 player just to get the experience and being a part of it. So I don't think you'll have to worry about keeping him happy. No, so it depends how the player kind of looks at it. And no, I'm not looking for the Euros. Can you tell? I'm not looking for it.
Well, anyone who's got their socks on the wing mirrors is right up there ready to go. I can't imagine what else paraphernalia you've got.
I might even buy a copy of the match and get myself a war chart.
Well, who doesn't have a wall chart? I mean, it's ridiculous. Marcus, look, it's been fantastic catching up with you. You're always a delight to talk to. And I know the people at Bury Football Club are going to be delightful. Looking forward to seeing you in July. So if you haven't got them, if you want to see Marcus in the person rather than listen to him or seeing him here, he's at Bury Town Football Club in July. So look on their website for that. That's the Isthmian League team here in Suffolk. Marcus, thanks for all the thanks for the chat again. You're always great to catch up with. Great memories and great future ahead of you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Good luck next season to the town. I'll be there at some point.
From true crime to football, Brexit to football. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon. from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.